Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church this beautiful fall morning. I'm your board representative today. My name is Jerry Flakus. We have a variety of announcements for you. First of all, please read the announcements in your order of service, and I encourage you to take the order of service home with you after the service as a reminder of the announcements. However, I do have a few, maybe it's quite a few, announcements to be read to you. Well, first of all, Jim Hobart would like to remind you of the first announcement in the order of service here of the book discussion group, which is going to be offered 7 Sundays, January 6th and 20th, February 3rd and 24th, March 10th and 24th, and April 7th. Please sign up today, November 25th. Well, by today, November 25th. Well, it's November 25th yet, but please sign up for it if you're interested. It is 25th. Oh, well. Carrie Duma would like me to announce that LCUUC is sponsoring a bag, a blanket, and a bear this holiday season to benefit children in the foster care system. If you'd like to help, please read the announcement about it in the order of service. Take a tag off the tree out in the foyer and buy a gift for this. We'll be doing a short multicultural holiday pageant on December 9th. If you'd like to participate in it, please see Kristen Sandin or Carrie Duma. The kindergarten through second grade and third and fifth grade class will be combined today and will meet in classroom 4. They will be going outside for a time during their class, so please be sure they have warm things with them when they go to their classroom. I have an announcement from Yvonne Fort. Thanks to all who helped bake, package, and sell for Friday's gigantic cookie sale over at the Country Springs, where we made, the church made almost $900 from the cookie sales. And a special thanks to Yvonne for organizing this and all the people who baked cookies and helped out at the sale. The remaining cookies will be for sale in the social hall after the service. Please pick up any containers you brought your cookies in. Okay, now I invite you to greet those sitting around you.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information on the information table in the foyer about our denomination and about our church. If you are visiting with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the door to my right on the other side of the foyer, across the entryway if there's a need for child care. Classes will end at 11:15 a.m., at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. Now, we always enjoy getting to know our guests, so if any guests would be comfortable to introduce yourself, please do so. Please do so, so we can welcome you. Welcome.
I'd like to introduce my daughter back from college, friend Alex.
Alex and Alex. Welcome, Alex's. Welcome. Okay, for your visitors, please join Reverend Jim Hobart and a few members after the service for a cup of coffee and a chat. We'd like to get to know you and answer any questions you might have, and we'll meet you in the minister's office to the right around the corner here, right after the church service. So please join us if you wish. So we hope you'll find this morning's service to be inspiring and enjoyable.
In case you noticed that we didn't follow what is announced in the order of service this morning, you can blame me. Anybody need to blame me? We come together here once again in this beloved community. We are a people devoted to upholding the deepest yearnings of the human spirit. We aspire to defend freedom and justice for all. We would resist every tyranny over human minds and hearts and souls and bodies. We seek to support respect and dignity for all. We would practice appreciative understanding one with another, as well as with the diverse peoples around our common earth home. We hold our individual beliefs and our different perspectives, and we experience in mutual sharing that these contrasts serve to enhance and expand the breadth and the depth of our religious community. We hold in common the affirmation that the true measure of our religious faith is discovered in the relationships we practice, not in the uniformity of our beliefs. This morning, as we gather together, once again we light the flaming chalice, a bright symbol of our shared religious faith. Our opening hymn is number 126, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing.
To higher ways, lift our humanness please turn to number 461 in your hymnals and join me in the congregational ingathering. Nothing worth doing is complete in our lifetime. Therefore, we are saved by hope. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history.
Therefore, we are saved by faith.
Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone.
Therefore, we are saved by love.
No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved by a final form of love, which is forgiveness. Barbara Howell will now present our story for all ages. Children, if you'd like to come down and have a seat down here for the story.
Somebody who will turn the pages. Now, today's sermon is about true redemption, which is a very heavy topic. And am I correct in thinking this bag was pretty heavy? Yeah, it was hard for me to come up with a book that would be appropriate, so I did, though. So, here you go.
Tiny little.
Yes, would you turn the pages? All right, I'm going to be reading Pierre, a story told in 5 chapters with a prologue. Prologue. There was once a boy named Pierre who would only say, "I don't care. Read a story, my friend. And you'll find in the end a suitable moral lies there." Chapter 1. Are you ready for chapter 1? Okay. You can move closer. I know the pictures are big, but if you need to move closer, you can. One day his mother said, when Pierre climbed out of bed, "Good morning, darling boy. You are my only joy. You are my only joy." Pierre said, "I don't care." "Would you like to eat?" "I don't care." "Some lovely cream of wheat." "I don't care." "Don't sit backwards in your chair." "I don't care." "You are acting like a clown." "I don't care." "We have to go to town." "I don't care." "Don't you want to come, my dear?" "I don't care." "Would you rather stay right here?" "I don't care." So his mother left him there. Chapter 2. His father said, did you get to chapter 2 yet? His father said, "Get off your head or I will march you up to bed." And Pierre said, "I don't care." "I think that you could see I don't care. Your head is where your feet should be. I don't care. If you keep standing upside down, I don't care. We will never get to town. I don't care. If only you would say, I care. I don't care. I'll let you fold the folding chair. I don't care." So his parents left him there. They didn't take him anywhere. Chapter 3. Ready for chapter 3? Now, as the night began to fall, a hungry lion paid a call. He looked Pierre right in the eye and asked him if he'd like to die, and Pierre said, "I don't care." "I can eat you, don't you see? I don't care. And you will be inside of me. I don't care. Then you will never have to bother. I don't care. With a mother or a father. I don't care. Is that all you have to say? I don't care. Then I will eat you if I may. I don't care." So the lion ate Pierre. Chapter 4. Arriving home at 6 o'clock, his parents had a dreadful shock. They found a lion sick in bed and cried, "Pierre is surely dead." They pulled the lion by the hair. They hit him with a folding chair. His mother asked, "Where is Pierre?" And the lion answered, "I don't care." His father said, "Pierre is in there." Chapter 5. They rushed the lion into town. The doctor shook him up and down. And when the lion gave a roar, Pierre fell out upon the floor. He rubbed his eyes and scratched his head and laughed because he wasn't dead. His mother cried and held him tight, and his father asked, "Are you all right?" And Pierre said, "I am feeling fine. Please take me home. It's 9:30. The lion said, "If you would care to climb on me, I will take you there." But everyone looked at Pierre, who shouted, "Yes, indeed, I care!" The lion took them home to rest and stayed on as a weekend guest. The moral of Pierre is, care.
Now is the time when we invite you to share, when we invite all to share their joys and concerns with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand. When the usher brings you a microphone, please briefly tell us your name and the concern or joy that you would wish to share. I will light the first candle to represent, I will light a candle to represent your joy or concern. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys be multiplied. First, I will light a memorial candle to acknowledge all the many conflicts in our world. May a peaceful resolution to them be found.
Hi, I'm Jim Tyler, and I'd like a candle of love. Janice and I are celebrating 29 years of marriage.
I'm Janice, and I have a candle of concern, and it's not about our marriage. But my younger brother, Fred, has some very serious health issues, kidney cancer and thyroid cancer. So a candle for him.
Is 97 years old and has broken her hip and is in therapy, and our only hope is that she can go back to her apartment and live her happy life again.
Hi, I'm Barb. I'd like to light a candle of joy for everything we have and our families and this church and all the people in it. It's just overwhelming how much joy can be in our lives if we just look for it.
A candle of support and hope for the world's youth. Somehow this morning I started thinking about that age, that late teen, early 20s stage of life, and I'm inspired by those that I know of that age, but also reflective of how difficult it can be sometimes.
I'm Sonia. I'd like to light a candle of concern for Jason's aunt, Cammie, who is 45 years old, has been undergoing chemo, and now they're concerned that there are issues with her heart, so she's had to stop to undergo testing.
I will light one more candle to represent those joys or concerns that we wish to keep silent today.
Let us join together in a period of reflection and meditation and prayer. Life source, creating and sustaining power, give us to know that we are the time's keepers. We are the place's keepers of life. Individuals and community, we live at life's center, custodians and stewards for our time and place. This here and now we inhabit together. In these fleeting times and these fragile places, we discern the promise and the danger of our days and years. Ours is the free decision to turn toward or to turn away from our personal and shared responsibility. Ours this difficult choice, seeking to turn toward and affect the quality of our day, or turning away from this formidable and uncertain task. Our decisions lie at a balance point, lifting up or weighing down the promise of our times. May we have the vision and the courage to choose well. And now, in silence, let us each continue in this spirit of reflection and meditation and prayer. Amen. Let us join together in hymn number 112, Do You Hear? And I invite you to rise in body or in spirit.
Stand, the sun and the moon.
hear, do you hear? In the heights, on the plain, in the vale, on the main, in the sun, in the rain, do you hear, do you hear? Through the roar, through the rush, through the throng, through the crush, do you hear in the hush of your soul, hear the cry, fear won't still, hear the heart's call to know, hear a sigh, startling trill, in your soul, from the place where you stand, to the outermost strand, hear, oh my friend, do you hear, do you hear? All the dreams, all the dares, all the sighs, all the prayers, they are yours, mine, and theirs. Do you hear? Do you I would not have guessed at exactly 10 o'clock that there would be as many of you as there are here this morning. It's great to see so many happy faces. Memory. Memory is the primary resource of our learning. Through our memory, we remember events and facts and faces and voices and formulas and stories. We re-enter the past through memory. We recall. We think of someone or something again. We are mindful about what has occurred. We bring to mind an image or a thought. Memory, remembering, is an antidote. It is the answer to personal and historical forgetfulness. The poet T.S. Eliot speaks this way of the immediacy of our memory. Only in time can the moment in the rose garden, the moment in the arbor where the rain beat, the moment in the drafty church at Smokefall be remembered, involved with past and future. Forgetfulness robs us of bringing what has been experienced and learned into the present. Forgetting is both an individual and a social amnesia, which deprives us of the successes and the failures, the lessons of the past. George Santayana wrote, "Progress, far from consisting in change, depends on retentiveness. Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to fulfill it." Memory preserves the rich resource of the past through history, biography, philosophy, science, research, theology, poetry, literature, education, through politics and government and business and industry, through legend and myth and mathematics, and all other human endeavors. Memory, however, can be fickle, and it can be fallible. A case in point would be today's sermon title. To begin, I trusted my memory and I remembered that the title I had in mind for this sermon was Real Redemption. Memory failed me at first, but then I remembered. The title I had in mind was True Redemption. And I like that a lot better than Real Redemption. Now, to be sure, I do not give much importance to sermon titles. I do appreciate an imaginative and inviting title. I have a sense of personal satisfaction when I can come up with one. However, the promise of a sermon lies in the content, not in the title. A promising sermon title without a promising sermon content is a bit of ministerial sleight of hand. It is a reverend shell game. More important, the promise of the sermon always lies in the context of the full worship service and the worshiping congregation. If the service is flat and uninspiring, and if the gathered congregation is passive and inattentive and unengaged, even the most promising sermon will suffer. Worship is a community activity. It is not an individual ministerial performance. So if true redemption becomes real redemption, it doesn't matter much. What does matter is the story. How did I come to the title and the subject? Well, once upon a time is always a good place to begin. Once upon a time, I was asked to co-facilitate a workshop on anti-racism and anti-oppression. And I had the pleasure of spending the weekend as a guest at a Four Points Sheraton hotel. As I was getting settled into my room, a booklet on the table caught my eye. It was titled True Redemption. I thought, oh, some religious group left this booklet in hopes of promoting my redemption and salvation. I'll have to look it over later. But that's the way I am. I am curious about religion. I don't expect to agree with the religious materials that I find in hotels. I have never found anything remotely close to liberal religion in my room, with the possible exception of the Gideon's King James Bible. Nevertheless, I am curious about what religious tracts have to say about such things as redemption. Well, I was in a rush, and so I left the hotel to participate in the program, but I returned back to my hotel room several hours later, and once again the True Redemption booklet came to my attention, so I picked it up. Well, the first thing I noted was the full title on the cover, and it was Starwood Preferred Guest True Redemption. And I began to suspect that this booklet probably was not about religion. I looked a little further, and I discovered the cover photograph was of the Hotel Cala di Volpe in Costa Smeralda, Italy. And I noticed at the bottom of the page that there were logos and names for Weston and Sheraton and Four Points and St. Regis and Luxury Collection and W Hotels. Well, I said silently, since there was no one else with me, True Redemption does not appear to be religious. It appears to be commercial. But I opened the first page, and my assumption was verified. It read, True Redemption, so easy to experience. And it promised promoting the Sherwood Preferred Guest Card. The second page informed me, as a Starwood Preferred Guest, you can redeem your star points at over 750 hotels in over 80 countries. No ifs, ands, or blackouts. Now that's true redemption. Well, the following pages illustrated luxury hotels, beaches, pools, golf courses, ski resorts, and tourist cities. And each page announced, now that's true redemption. Well, so much for my religious anticipation. Instead, I found invitations for true redemption, at hotels I can't afford and expensive recreation which I don't even enjoy. Some redemption, I thought. I finally find where I can get it, and it's a disappointment. Well, redemption, of course, has two general meanings. One is secular and one is religious. And one secular meaning is illustrated by the booklet that I had in my hand, True Redemption, which was about redemption points offered for purchases. But there are other such secular meanings for redemption. The redemption of a mortgage by paying it off. The redemption of coupons offering value in cents and dollars. The redemption of airline frequent flyer miles for seating upgrades or tickets. I really like those. The redemption of a pawned watch by paying the pawn fee. The redemption of a captive by paying a ransom. The redemption of a slave by buying his or her freedom. Our English word redemption is derived from the Latin word redemptus, and it means variously buying back, deliverance, rescue, repurchase, paying off, recovering, discharging or fulfilling a pledge or promise, making amends for. In its traditional religious meaning in Judaism and Christianity, redemption means to deliver from sin and its consequences by means of a sacrifice offered by a sinner or on behalf of a sinner, or by a sacrifice on behalf of a sinful people. And this understanding is not limited to the Jewish and Christian traditions. The ritual sacrifice of animals and people has been practiced by many traditional cultures around the world. Well, I find a problem with the common secular meaning of redemption, as in Starwood's True Redemption. This usage is banal. It trivializes a powerful concept, reducing it to economic greed. The message of true redemption is spend lots so you can get lots more. And there is a problem, too, with the traditional concept of redemption of some Christians. It is discovered in the affirmation that the only possible way to salvation God has provided for disobedient, hopelessly depraved sinners is for them to accept the redemption from their sin offered in the innocent Jesus Christ's blood sacrifice on their behalf, his conviction and crucifixion and death and resurrection. This meaning limits redemption to just one religious meaning. And if redemption has only that one meaning for all humankind, I think we religious liberals have to reject it as a violation of our intellect and our conscience and our religious heritage. Many of us, perhaps even most of us, have relinquished this powerful religious concept. All too often, we religious liberals have been all too quick to concede to religious conservatives and fundamentalists powerful religious concepts such as redemption. And as a result, we religious liberals are often left with a starved and a weak religious vocabulary, one which does not nourish intellectually or emotionally, and our religious spirits are not sustained, and neither is our religious life and our public witness. Now, please don't misunderstand me. This is not an appeal this morning for us to return to that old-time religion from which many of us struggle long and hard to free ourselves. Rather, remember, I speak for religious remembering, reclaiming our liberal religious memory. I'm calling for a reexamination of what true redemption might look like for religious liberals. This will be a positive understanding of redemption that draws upon and is derived from our own liberal religious history and tradition. Ours will not be an understanding of redemption contested on the terms of others, either religious or secular. It must be on our own terms. So what is true redemption in our liberal religious story? We can begin with one of our central religious and theological words, and that would be Unitarian. Those who were first called Unitarians affirmed the full humanity of Jesus. They were Unitarians, not Trinitarians, because they affirmed the oneness of God and the humanity of Jesus. And they based their interpretation and their reading of the Christian scriptures, primarily the four Gospels or stories of Jesus that we designate as Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Our Unitarian forebears affirmed that the best reading of these scriptures supported that Jesus was fully human. Jesus was not the man-God proposed by the Trinitarian interpreters. Historically, Unitarians affirm that Jesus is a man, a prophet, a teacher, a rabbi, an exemplar. The faith challenge that Jesus represented is not about what is believed about him. The liberal faith challenge is to seek to live informed and guided by integrity and purpose and love and justice in keeping with the example that Jesus set for all of these ideas. And in this spirit, for liberal religious faith, our true redemption is never achieved once and for all by accepting Jesus' vicarious atonement for what are otherwise our unpardonable sins. I saw a sign on the road as I drove up here this week, and it gave me the choice to decide whether I would spend eternity in heaven or in hell. One choice, one way or the other way. But in the spirit of Jesus' example, true redemption is an ongoing daily challenge to live our lives faithfully, one with another, person with person, community with community, nation with nation. The meaning of Jesus' life is discovered in his life story. Stories about the way he lived, the parables he told about what he called the realm of God is like. In his parables, Jesus maintained that the kingdom or the realm of God is both present now and it is coming in the future. And the power of Jesus' religious challenge to us is twofold. First, to live today as though that realm is manifest here and now within us and between us and among us, and is discovered over and over again in relationships of justice and equity and compassion and love. And second, the realm is still coming, and we can be ready for it, and we can strive toward it, and we can help bring it into being. Both in the present and in the future, the redemptive resources of justice and equity and compassion and love again and again promote our religious growth and our recreation as persons and as a society. This true redemptive power has been active in the past, and it is active now, and it will be active in the future. It is available now to sustain us, and it will be available ahead to challenge and to lure us. True redemption is giving oneself in service, and communities giving themselves in service to the redemptive resource and process which is always present as possibility, which is available as choice in the past and the present and in the future. No one and no community controls or contains this true redemption. It is always possible. It is available. Available if we have the eyes to see and the ears to hear and the curiosity to seek and the heart to understand and the courage to follow. Make no mistake, this liberal religious way of redemption is challenging and difficult and demanding, and it is also very satisfying. The ongoing way of religious growth and recreation often is. Ours is a religious way based in a sense of life vocation, a life vocation that transcends any and all of our occupational vocations. Our religious way calls us again and again toward a new direction, a change of heart, a reorientation of mind, a reorganization of priorities. In our liberal religious understanding, true redemption occurs over and over again. It occurs in all of our decisions as to what we will serve in a world that is fraught with opportunities to serve life, but is also fraught with opportunities to serve death. Well, if these concepts seem too abstract, remember these words attributed to Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. You will recognize them by their fruit. A good tree always yields sound fruit, and a poor tree, bad fruit. This is why I say you will recognize them by their fruit. Our true redemption, our religious fruit, is good or bad, depending on the decisions we make, attentively or inattentively, thoughtfully or thoughtlessly. And inevitably, we will make both kinds of decisions, and true resumption, therefore, is found in our capacity to seek to begin anew, to initiate attentive and thoughtful new beginnings, which redeem our old inattentive and thoughtless acts. Our liberal religious roots are planted deeply in this historic Unitarian Christian soil. Our true redemption begins with memory, reclaiming our historic liberal religious meaning for profound religious concepts, looking for the meaning in redemption and salvation and atonement and mission and covenant and repentance and even revelation. But this is the beginning. This is not the end. True redemption continues in our open and ongoing dialogue with those of all religious traditions and histories, Christians and Jews and Muslims, Buddhists and others. Dialogue, because a real conversation respects the integrity of all those who are partners within that conversation. Conversation, because in person-to-person, tradition-to-tradition discussion, we are less likely to fall prey to our Unitarian Universalist tendency to skim off for our own use and consumption the appealing features and practices and beliefs of others without going into the depth of these traditions. And this kind of casual appropriation does not respect or engage the depth and the breadth of a religious tradition and heritage, our own or any other. It cannot fathom the complexities of religious cultures. It cannot confront the ambiguities and the paradoxes that are present in every religion and in all religious scriptures. In our wondrous and dangerous human venture, T.S. Eliot again speaks to our challenge. Time present and time past are both perhaps present in time future, and time future contained in time past. Our true redemption lies in our readiness day by day to engage one another over and over again in the mysterious and non-linear religious relationships that lie within our linear concepts of time and of time past, present, and future. Ours is a lifelong religious vocation that is worthy of our best sustained effort, and really nothing less will do.
Thank you, Reverend Hobart. That certainly helped reframe my thoughts on redemption. Polylog, I think we do have time for polylog today. The polylog is a time in our service where we can share insights and reflections from this morning's service. Please offer your comments, remembering that the many perspectives that we represent. The speaker will be available after the service for your questions. If you raise your hand, an usher will bring a microphone. Please tell us your name and briefly state your thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I appreciate your sermon. And when you made reference to being redeemed by our fruits, I immediately thought of our children. And I think about the path that so many of us are on and wondering if we're on a good path or not. One way for me of knowing that we're we're all doing, despite our flaws, we're all doing remarkable things, is how amazing our children turn out. So having taught high school RE for more than a decade and watching so many kids come through and seeing them go off to college and become such amazing young people, that's redemption enough for me.
I just also wanted to say that I appreciate the complexity that you describe in terms of redemption. It's not a matter of just saying, okay, I believe this, but that it's involved every day and in a multitude of choices every day. And it's very helpful message, too. I appreciate that.
On the other hand, I appreciate your challenge on the skimming off. Makes me reflect a little bit on, this is very good, I'll just take this a little bit, without perhaps respecting what's behind it.
For me personally, redemption is dying to your past to make room for future growth. And you expressed that beautifully, Jim. Thank you.
When I was introduced to a Christianity in the age of, I think I was like a 28. So the concept of original sin was just so foreign to me that I have a hard time why you even have to be redeemed. But having said that, when I read the Bible and read what Jesus spoke about forgiveness, it was the most profound message. And I'm not quite sure you have to be redeemed from it by some religious practices or proclaiming that, you know, you believe in something that, you know, somebody else has forgive you. But it is a capacity of love to accept frailty of ourselves, and I don't know if this redemption is, you know, stem from original sin concept, or, you know, our existence of imperfectness, I guess.
Thank you. Jim will be available in the social hall afterward if anybody would like to speak to him further about the service. Let there be an offering to sustain and strengthen this place, which is sacred to so many of us, a community of memory and of hope, for we are now the keepers of the dream. The offering will now be received. Thank you. Please turn to affirmation number 470 in your hymnals and join me in the congregational affirmation. We affirm the unfailing renewal of life, rising from earth and reaching for the sun. All living creatures shall fulfill themselves. We affirm the steady growth of human companionship, rising from ancient cradles and reaching for the stars. People shall seek the ways of understanding. We affirm a continuing hope. Spirits of individuals shall rise and build a better world. Our closing hymn is number 331, Life is the Greatest Gift of All.
Please be seated. We came together here from the many and diverse places of our individual lives. Here we have given shape and form to our common religious faith and to the religious community which upholds it. Now we go forth, returning to our many and diverse places. Until we meet again, may our daily life be informed, and may the life of the places we move be enriched by the gifts that grace this time and place, gifts we have freely offered, gifts we have freely received, gifts we have freely shared here one with another. Now go forth with confidence. Go forth with loving hearts. Go forth with hands ready to serve. Amen.